We now begin the 10th Perek of Masechet Sanhedrin. This is Perek Yud, Mishnah Aleph, 10:1. Now, if you're keeping track, since the 7th Perek, we basically have been enumerating the four crimes for which there's an execution at the hands of the Beis Din, and we've elaborated on three of the four in terms of which crimes would get that punishment. So we listed the 18 that would get skila, stoning. Then we listed the 10 that would get sreifa, burning. And then we had the 2 that had hereg, beheading. Now, the second of those two was the Ir HaNidachas members, the people who served idols as part of a corrupted city. Now, the Mishnah, as we're wrapping up with two parakim to go, has three basic points it still wants to cover in the Masechta. Number one, it wants to elaborate on the Ir HaNidachas itself and how that works. The second thing it wants to make a point of is that the people of the Ir HaNidachas have no chelik in Olam Haba, and therefore the Mishnah wants to explain secondarily who does and doesn't get, does not get Olam Haba, a share in the world to come. And then the Mishnah also has to elaborate on the fourth of the modes of execution, namely chenek, strangulation, and there'll be six different crimes which one will get chenek, so we have to elaborate on those six. So those are the topics left to go. Now, the way that we have it in front of us here in our Mishnayos, which is the same way that it has it in the Yerushalmi, is that the 10th Perek gives three Mishnayos to talk about Olam Haba, and then it transitions to the latter three Mishnayos of the 10th Perek, talking about the Anche Ir HaNidachas, the members of the Wayward City, how that works, and that they too don't have Olam Haba. And then the 11th chapter is to wrap up the topic of Chenek. The way that the Bavli has it, is that the 10th chapter is talking about Chenek, I'm wrapping up the topic of the Arba Misos Beis Din, and then once you wrap that up, then we'll go in the last chapter to talk about Olam Haban, who doesn't have it, and as a kind of second half to that, we'll also discuss the Ir HaNidachas. Okay, so that's what's happening for the rest of the Masechta and how it's structured in front of us here. So here our first three Mishnayos talk about Olam Haba, which is the hereafter, after one dies. Super briefly, there is a range of opinions of exactly when and what that looks like and how that happens. The short of it is that according to the Rambam, as well as say the Meiri and others, in that line of thinking, say when a person dies, he goes to Olam Haba. There'll be a temporary resurrection for a final judgment, and then ultimately people might live longer, but they go back to being just souls and live in Olam Haba forever. Most others, like the Ramban and his Talmidim, and like say the Ramchal and the Kabbalists, understand that there's a few stages to things. First, a person dies. At that point, he goes to Gehenna if need be to be purified. Otherwise, he goes, or after that, he goes to Gan Eden, which is sort of like a Olam HaNeshamos, a place where the souls wait, and they are waiting for resurrection, which will happen essentially at the end of the Messianic era. Messianic era, when the Yimos of Mashiach, then here on planet Earth, that's happening essentially within the 6,000 years of human history, and it's sort of a process. The Rambam learns a natural process. The Mashiach is like he's a Navi, but he's a political leader, political genius, who brings back the Beis Hamikdash and its offering and its operations, as well as the Jewish people come back to Eretz Yisrael, and we sort of have this idyllic situation of the Jewish nation expressing a society that is reflecting the will of God and the glory of God, as Hashem sort of envisioned it from the beginning when he gave the Torah. At the end of that, there's a Tchias HaMesim. All the people who died who are coming back then get resurrected. There's a final din called Yom HaDin HaGadol VaHaNora, the Great Day of Judgment. And that may happen only maybe even after 1,000 years after Mashiach is over, like at the beginning of the 7,000th year. There's different opinions what happens, but at some point at the end or after the Mashiach era, there's this great resurrection, Tchias HaMesim. There's a final judgment, and then after that, there's a continuation into Olam Haba, the world to come, which goes on forever. And according to most, virtually all of those people in the line of thinking, the body and soul stay united forever, and the body and soul live on forever, although the body becomes pretty subordinate, sort of like, just like a little a shell for holding the soul. But anyways, it lives on forever. So when we're talking here about Olam Haba, we're talking about, according to Rambam, just a share in the world to come when one dies, like what we'd call Gan Eden, perhaps. Or maybe we're talking about, according to others, the ultimate living on forever after Tchias HaMesim. So our Mishnah starts out by saying here, and this is well known because the chapters of Pirkei Avos have it also at their heading, Kol Yisrael, every member of the Jewish people, Yesh Lehem Chelek L'Olam Haba, has a place in the world to come. You'll note that it's la olam haba, to the world to come, not in the world to come, because it means that a person is hooked up right now to his olam haba, even though olam haba doesn't like exist yet, but like the hookup is there, and what one does down here builds his world, so to speak, in olam haba. So your olam haba, your world to come, your reward, essentially is the enjoyment of the process you went through in terms of your growth, lufum tzara agra, in terms of your efforts and the relationship you build with Hashem while you're here. Shene'emar, as the pasuk says, this is a pasuk from Yeshaya, which is actually kind of a drasha. The pasuk stands to be talking about Timos Mashiach, but anyways, with the drasha, it's va'ameich kulam tzadikim, your nation, they're all righteous, all the Jews are righteous, la'olam yirshu aretz, they will inherit the land eternally. This aretz here is understood to refer to the olam habat land. Netzer mata'ai, like a branch of my planting, kind of referring back to that idea of like the hookup. A branch growing, you know, down here is taking the nutrients, but up there the flowers, the fruits are growing. Ma'aseh yadai lehispa'er, the works of my hands to glorify myself, says Hashem. Meaning this Olam Haba is a place where it's all Hashem's doing, as opposed to down here on Olam Hazeh, in Olam Haba, it's a world of Hashem's doing. Olam Hazeh, this world, although of course Hashem made it, he did create a creature who could corrupt things and mess things up, which is called humanity, Bnei Adam. So therefore the world, whether it's success or failure, is partially due to the choices of humanity, as opposed to Olam Haba, which is essentially all Hashem's doing. Now that is talking about the basic point that every Jew gets Olam Haba, and the point would be that even if you suffer at the hands of the courts getting one of these punishments for even a crime that one did commit, and he's worthy of misa, of execution, even so, if it is tshuva, the confession before he dies, so then the suffering endures through the death at the hands of the Beis Din, atones for that, and he has done tshuva, so afterwards he can live in Olam Haba, even though he did this crime. So doing the crime and getting executed is a reward and punishment, a punishment, but it doesn't mean one loses Olam Haba. And that's the main point of what this would be saying over here. There are those, like the Marshal, who don't even say that this occult sentence we've said so far does not actually belong in the Mishnayos originally, but the original Mishnayos started at the next words, which is Ve'elu She'elim Chelek L'Olam Haba. The following people don't even have a place in the world to come at all, so it's developing on a thought of people who are doing Aveiras and getting punished. And then this first sentence was added earlier on, according to some, to sort of, you know, start with a good topic first. But as it may, now we're going to list people who don't have a share in the world to come. I mean, even though built into the nature of what it means to be a Jew is you have a chelik la'olam haba, like I said before, you're hooked up to the beyond, and what you do down here, build something up there, a person can do avers which destroy his soul, which create him to be unable to have the relationship. And the primary reason why that would happen, essentially, is because one rejects, repudiates, denies, destroys his relationship with Hashem. So since ultimately, Olam Haba is a reflection of the relationship one fostered and developed and created when he had Bechira between himself and Hashem. If he rejects that relationship altogether, then he simply, you know, can't have a place in the world to come. There's no place for him up there. One thing I should say before we read on here is that although it does say Kol Yisrael, every Jew has a share in the world to come, that should not be understood to mean that non-Jews do not have a share in the world to come. Not true, and you'll see later on, the Mishnayos, in the next couple of Mishnayos, will list certain people who are not Jewish and say, oh yeah, Bilam has a share in the world to come. Oh yeah, the generation of the flood and of of the haflaga, of the dispersal and so on. The people of Sodom, they have no place in the world to come. But other non-Jews do have a place in the world to come if they're from the Chasidei Umas Olam, the righteous Gentiles, which the Rambam talks about in the 8th parak of Hilchos Malachim. And if a non-Jew keeps the Sheva Mitzvahs B'nei Noach, those seven mitzvahs, and he keeps them because Hashem said so, so then he is a righteous Gentile, and he has a place in the world to come. So, says the Mishnah further now, Ve'elu she'ein lehem chelek l'olam haba. The following people, however, destroying their relationship with Hashem, do not have a portion of the world to come, because of their own choices. First of all, ha'omer ein t'chias ha'mesim min ha'torah. One who says there is not going to be this resurrection at the end to bring us into the world to come, and that's not from the Torah, not mentioned in the Torah. So Rashi focuses on the Min HaTorah part of it, saying the guy could believe in Olam Haba and Tchias HaMesim, and that there will be resurrection, but that the Torah doesn't say it. So Rashi says, since, listen, our basis is to our access to Hashem is through His Torah, and the basis by which we relate to Hashem through His Torah is predicated on Amunas Chacham and the Torah Shebaal Peh, the tradition we have of how to understand things. And the rabbis told us our tradition is that certain things in the Torah do refer to Tichas HaMeisim, and it is one of the articles of faith that is built into our Torah tradition since Har Sinai. So if you reject that, so you've rejected, you know, the tradition, and therefore you've severed your relationship. Others focus more on the Tichas HaMeisim part, per se, not the Min HaTorah part, that if you reject the notion of a Tichas HaMeisim, then okay, so you won't get Tichas HaMeisim, you won't get resurrected, so what could I do? The second person on the list who hasn't got Olam Haba, says the Mishnah, is Ve'ein Torah Min HaShamayim, one who says that Torah isn't from heaven, meaning that he says that Moshe Rabbeinu made up some of it or all of it, but even just like, you know, one mitzvah, one din. So the point is that if you're, again, since our access to Hashem, the relationship that we have with him, is forged through how he revealed his will to us, that's all we have to go on, and that is done primarily through the Torah. So without the Torah, we don't have access to Hashem or his will. So if you think that, if you say the Torah is not from Hashem, so you say you reject the relationship, that severs the tie, and therefore a person has no relationship in eternity, and therefore he has no chelik in Olam Haba. And the third is the Apikoros. Now the Apikoros, the way that the Bartanura learns it, and I think the consensus of the Poskim and the Mefarshim, is that we're talking about someone who is mevazeh, who deprecates, who makes fun of or belittles or doesn't respect sufficiently the Talmidei Chachamim, the rabbis, the people who have maintained our tradition since Moshe Rabbeinu, and all Kol Shekhen, all the more so if one is Mevazeh, if one disgraces, deprecates, denigrates the Torah itself. Okay, so again, same kind of thinking. The way we have access to Hashem is through his Torah, we rely on the Chachamim. If you basically reject that, don't support it, whatever it is, so then, so now you haven't got you're foregoing your relationship with Hashem, the essential point, so therefore, what have you got? Nothing. So you can't have Tichias HaMeisim. The word Apikoros, according to most, is from a Lashon Hefker, and not what is, I think, often seen as the more commonly explained thing that I've seen anyways, is that it's related to the word Epicurean. Okay? Probably not. Probably not. But again, okay, probably not Epicurean. Okay. Now, besides those three, Rabbi Kiva Omer, Af HaKoros Sfar Machitzonim. Rabbi Kiva says a couple more items to the list. One of them is one who reads Sfarim Chitzonim, call that external books, probably referring, literally translated as things like, you know, what we call today the Apocrypha, books that were outside the canon, I don't know, the Book of Maccabees and the Ben Sira. But the point here is more generally heretical books, books that go against the tradition, that are antithetical to the Torah, because they teach things that are contrary to the Torah's values or the Torah's, you know, basic principles. Now, the Bar Tanura says, he actually gives specific examples. He says that it's heretical books, for example, like the books of Aristotle and his fellow Greek philosophers. Okay, that's the Bar Tanura's position. And he adds, in addition, other kinds of, I don't know, like fiction and poetry and the like, which, you know, history books that have no point. She'ein behem chochma, they have no wisdom in them. V'lo to'elis, and no other purpose. Ela ibud zman b'levad, they're just there for entertainment, to, you know, to waste time, to while away the time. So that, again, would be, according to Rabbi Kiva, svar mechitzonim, which would cost a person his olam haba. The way that's probably to be understood, like the Kovetz Shiurim says, is that it's not that it's a crime per se to read these books that automatically is so severe one will lose his olam haba, but rather that if he studies these books, so what happens is it's going to draw him away from Torah and Hashem until the ultimate consequence will be that he repudiates their relationship and therefore he has no place in the world to come. Now you have also, says Rabbi Kiva, another one, which is v'halochesh al hamaka. Literally means one who whispers over a wound. It says the Gemara and Bartanura brings like this. We're talking about someone who spits on his wound first and then utters like incantations, like a pasuk, to be as like a prayer, if you will, to heal his wound. As the pasuk says, Va'omer, the guy says over his spit that's on his wound, Kol amachle asher samti b'mitzrayim lo asim alecha ki ani Hashem rofecha. That's the pasuk that's from Shmos, says all the various sicknesses that I placed upon Egypt, I will not place upon you, because I am Hashem, your healer. So the thought is, though, that he is using that verse over the spit, invoking Hashem by saying Hashem with the name of Hashem, And that is like a disgrace to Hashem so much that it's like a forfeiture of the world to come, says Rabbi Akiva. So the focus here, according to the Bartur and others, is like the saying the Shem Hashem over the spittle. That's the disgrace. The Rambam sort of explains further, adding to that, because it's the Gemara. But the Rambam says it's not. It's like bad enough that this is in Hilchos Avodah Zarah, Perek Yud Aleph, Din Halacha Yud Beis, 11:12. So he says it's a little dial hand. It's not bad enough that people who do this are like in the category of, you know, witches and sorcerers doing all sorts of, you know, occult stuff. But worse than that, they're like from the category of those who are kofrim b'Torah, who repudiate, deny the whole Torah, because they make the Torah, Shein osen divrei Torah refuas haguf, ve'enem ela refuas nefashos. They make the Torah into like for healing purposes for like the body, and that's not what the Torah is at all. The Torah is like a guide for the soul, not the body per se, and therefore you sort of demean the Torah so severely. It's like losing your Olam Haba, again, repudiating that relationship altogether. Finally, Abba Shaul Omer. Abishol adds another person to the list, which is Af HaHoge Es Hashem Be'osi Osav. Also somebody who pronounces the Shem Hashem, God's name, as it's written with his letters, which according to the Barturah and most others, is saying the name Yud, and then the Hey, and then the Vav, and then the Hey, as it's written, pronouncing that word. Again, that's such an affront to the Kavod Shemaim that would cost a person's world to come, according to Abishol. Rashi learns that we're talking about not that four-letter name, but rather the 42-letter name, which appeared was made a feature in the Beis Hamikdash in certain occasions. So that's the name you shouldn't pronounce. Be that as it may, we shouldn't pronounce any of these names. In fact, one shouldn't even say Yud, Hey, Vav, and then a Hey. Not even that. According to many, you should. That's why we say Yud, K, Vav, K, or Havaya, as the case may be. But certainly, even at all times, we don't pronounce it as written. We always say, you know, Adon, Aleph, Dalet, Nun, Yud. Aleph, Dalet, Nun, Yud, to pronounce the Shem Hashem.